Hello, this is Carolyn with the News Gazette, dated 1/31/25. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Savoy Village Board, Bump in the Road. Inflation pushes cost estimate for Curtis Road Underpass Project up to $14 million, by Jana Wiersma. The projected cost of the long-awaited Curtis Road underpass has gone up to $14 million, with the increase attributed to inflationary pressure since 2021. The uptick was one of several points covered by the village staff, Clark Dietz and Hansen Professional Services, Inc., in a project update presented to the Savoy Village Board. While inflationary impacts have increased the overall cost, the village remains confident in its ability to utilize its RAISE grant and to close that inflationary gap without increasing taxes and without the need to issue bonds, Village President John Brown told the News Gazette. Village staff has already shown a tremendous ability to collaborate with our local, state, and federal partners to secure additional funding, and I have the utmost confidence in their ability to continue to do so. The project cost, previously estimated to be $40.3 million, is now expected to be $54.4 million. Village staff said that Savoy has raised $52.4 million from various funding sources, which leaves a funding gap of $2 million. Proposed solutions include pursuing additional external funding, value engineering, and/or self-funding. Despite this new bump in the road, there is still excitement among village officials about the progress of the work. "I am really looking forward to cutting the ribbon on this project," said Trustee Bill Vavrick. However, a straw poll on directing staff and consultants to move forward with the project and continue bringing items to the board for approval had one dissenting vote, Trustee Jan Nickum, who said he was not ready to vote on going forward all the way. While Nickum expressed support for certain aspects of the project, he said that the cost could increase further, and he has heard from many constituents who are worried about, quote, potential inflation overruns, end quote. "I do not want to see the taxpayers of Savoy saddled with the bill in the end," he said. In addition to its price tag, the project's timeline has also changed. Brown said that Phase 1 engineering is estimated to be about 60% complete, and Phase 2 should be able to begin late this year. "With the progress that the village continues to make, we now estimate to bid in late 2026 or early 2027. With construction anticipated to start in 2027, he told the News Gazette. Per Wednesday's presentation, the work is expected to continue through 2030. Village officials had previously estimated that the construction would begin in 2026 and be finished by the end of 2028. When asked about the change, Village Administrator Christopher Walton said that in a project such as this one, where the village is working with a variety of local, state, federal, and private partners, each entity has its own, quote, deliberate and methodical project review process, end quote. However, the pace of those reviews is beyond the village's scope of control, he said. Delays from one organization's review have impacts on the reviews of subsequent organizations, which is something that the village has experienced with this project. However, it is important to note that the project schedule provides for a measure of flexibility, and the village is confident that this project will be completed on time. Wednesday's presentation also included preliminary designs for roadway changes along different sections of Curtis Road, including a roundabout at First Street and Curtis. Public Works Director Roland White said this will help the village meet grant criteria regarding safety, mobility, quality of life, and innovation. "Roundabouts are safer than the traditional signalized intersections," he said. "There's statistically 90% fewer fatalities, 75% fewer injuries, 30 to 40% reduction in pedestrian crashes, 10% reduction in bicycle crashes. From an efficiency standpoint, you have improved traffic flow, Nobody's waiting at stops when no one else is there. White added that compact, modern roundabouts are different from large rotary intersections and are designed to make traffic slow down. Brown said the village will host another open house on the project sometime in the next few months. Additionally, he said that the project will help improve response times, spur economic growth, and provide reliably safe pedestrian accessibility. Still on the front page, Illinois State Police. Police footage offers glimpse into EIU death. Officer's gun snatched while trying to assist. By Luke Taylor. Charleston. Officers had little time to react in the seconds after a young man grabbed one of their guns before he turned it on himself early Saturday morning. After Eastern Illinois University students and Charleston community members raised concerns about an incident that ended in the death of Yaakov Dennis, 22, of Country Club Hills, Illinois State Police released footage obtained from body-worn and dash-mounted cameras. Illinois State Police Trooper Schaefer McCune said state police became involved in the investigation because Illinois law requires a separate department to investigate any officer-involved death, and it isn't uncommon to request ISP perform that investigation. In the footage the state police released, the officer wearing the camera arrives on scene just after 1 a.m. Saturday and approaches a gas pump at Lambeau's at 200 West Lincoln Avenue, Charleston. A car, apparently belonging to Mr. Dennis, is already parked near the pump, as is a police vehicle from which the dash cam footage appears to originate. Two other officers are already on the scene and speaking with Mr. Dennis, but are unintelligible until the officer wearing the camera gets closer. "We get lots of calls about people who are too high," one says. "What's going on, man?" "I'm just too high," Mr. Dennis responds. "Okay, I appreciate you calling, man," the officer says. The officers tell Mr. Dennis to relax and offer to move his car away from the pump so it doesn't have to be towed. But Mr. Dennis indicates he would prefer it be towed. One begins asking about what drugs Mr. Dennis consumed, saying he won't get in trouble and they just want to inform paramedics of the situation. Mr. Dennis says that he smoked marijuana and that this was not the first time, but that he believed it was laced, probably with PCP. PCP is phenylcyclohexylpiperidine, also known as angel dust, and it isn't uncommon for it to be mixed with marijuana or tobacco. PCP is known to cause hallucinations and other negative psychological effects. An officer asks Mr. Dennis why he believes he consumed PCP, and Mr. Dennis says he isn't sure. He says he knew he had an essay due and got too caught up thinking about it, and by the time he wrote it, he, quote, started tripping out, end quote. He also confirms that he was experiencing hallucinations when an officer asks. Mr. Dennis is visibly shaking in the footage and appears to be unsteady on his feet, but he declines an officer's suggestion to sit in a car to stay warm. He begins shaking once more and backing into the gas pump, apparently struggling to breathe or reacting to something else. Two officers, who were standing just a few steps away, approach, and one tells him to take deep breaths. The officer wearing the camera reaches out, which he says later in the footage was an attempt to help Mr. Dennis stay standing. Mr. Dennis reaches forward and takes a firearm from the holster on his belt. "He's got my gun," the officer calls out, quickly running around the parked police vehicle. In the dash cam footage, the second officer who approached Mr. Dennis can be seen grappling with him, but he isn't able to stop Mr. Dennis from turning the gun on himself. A gunshot can be heard in the body cam footage, and apparently another officer calling, "Shots fired!" The officer who was grappling with Mr. Dennis leans over him, and another runs over, as does the officer wearing the camera. "I was trying to hold him up, and then he grabbed..." The officer trails off as the other two react and update dispatch about the situation. I don't even know how. Mr. Dennis's family had an opportunity to view the footage before it was released to the public, and it was released with authorization from the Coles County State's Attorney. McCune said that the Illinois State Police investigation into the incident is ongoing. EIU President Jay Gattrell confirmed Mr. Dennis was an EIU student in a university-wide email recommending counseling resources to students on Sunday. Students have held multiple vigils in Mr. Dennis's memory in the days since his death. Still in the first section of the News Gazette, our community's page. Incident at Parkland Point Apartments. Champagne man pleads guilty to murder in 2021 shooting by Luke Taylor. Just as his trial was set to begin, a Champagne man has pleaded guilty to first-degree murder in a 2021 shooting at an apartment complex near Parkland College. Tony Brock, 20, was a juvenile on October 31, 2021, when he shot Brandon Kelly Jr., 20, of Champaign, but was charged as an adult because the crime was murder. He faces a minimum of 20 years in prison, followed by 3 years of mandatory supervised release when he is sentenced. As a result of his plea, prosecutors dismissed 4 other charges of first-degree murder against Brock in the same incident. According to evidence that Assistant State's Attorney Joel Fletcher said he would have presented if the trial went forward, Mr. Kelly was leaving a Halloween party at the Parkland Point Apartments with friends when they were approached by another group that included Brock. In surveillance footage, a person whom investigators identified as Brock can be seen raising his arm and inflicting a blow to Mr. Kelly's neck area. Wounds and a metal projectile found on Mr. Kelly's neck were consistent with the footage. Police said he was hit at least 5 times, and they recovered 20 bullet casings. Fletcher said digital forensic analysts were able to track the movements of the person who inflicted the wounds through the apartment complex and to a parking lot where a separate video depicting Brock's face was recovered. Officers executed a search warrant on Brock's home on January 27, 2022, and found him attempting to leave as they arrived. They found he owned a coat like the one seen in the initial surveillance footage. Officers also discovered 3 guns in the apartment, one of which was a 9mm loaded handgun near a loaded magazine under Brock's mother's mattress. His mother, Ashley Z. Robinson, 35, of Savoy, said the gun belonged to her and she had asked her son to get it for her. Due to a prior federal conviction for tax fraud, Robinson is not allowed to possess a weapon. She was charged with unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, but the case was later dismissed. The jury had already been selected, and Brock's trial was about to begin Wednesday when he pleaded guilty. Since he has been incarcerated while awaiting trial, since his arrest, Brock will receive credit for 1,099 days served when he is sentenced, and may receive additional credit based on programs he participated in during that time. Still on the Our Communities page of the News Gazette, Community Housing Unit Stop, Danville Man Arrested on Gun Charges. By the News Gazette. A Danville man has been arrested on a warrant charging him with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Danville police said about 5:15 p.m. Wednesday, officers with its community housing unit stopped DeVaris Jackson, 21, in the 1100 block of Fowler Avenue in the Grove apartment complex after recognizing him from information given during a previous shots-fired call. Police said officers then learned of the warrant and searched Jackson, finding a loaded gun, and further determined he did not have a concealed carry license. He was arrested and taken to the public safety building. The investigation is ongoing, and police ask anyone with information to contact them at 217-431-2250. Those wishing to remain anonymous can contact Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-8477 or vccrimestoppers.org or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Continuing the Our Communities section of the News Gazette, Danville City Council, Cigar Lounge proposed for old bus station. Developers seek grant to help with renovations. By Jennifer Bailey. Danville. A local real estate agent and an attorney are planning to open a new cigar lounge and seeking help from the city in the form of funding from a tax increment financing district. Austin Suprenant and Jared Trigg, principals of Cedar and Smoke LLC, have applied for a grant from the Western Gateway TIF District Redevelopment Incentive Project to renovate a former bus station at 25 North Franklin Street for their new business. The grant program allows for reimbursement for improvements to a property. The total to be invested in the Western Gateway TIF District is projected to be $345,000, according to the city resolution. Cedar and Smoke is requesting a grant for 50% reimbursement of TIF district eligible renovations to not exceed $50,000 to be awarded after the completion of the project. The Danville City Council's Public Services Committee recommended approval this week, and the full council will act on the grant application and budget amendment next week. It's going to be basically a high-end smoke lounge and cigar lounge, is how they've described it, said Logan Kronk, the city's community development administrator. Kronk said he's hoping Suprenant and Trigg will attend next week's council meeting, where the final vote will take place. Kronk said the owner's plans call for the entire building to be gutted and renovated, with about $200,000 to $250,000 to be invested into the space. Ward 2 Alderman Rick Strebbing said the duo have been working on the project for about 6 months to a year. Ward 4 Alderman Tricia Teague questioned how the business can open with Illinois not allowing indoor smoking. Kronk said an original location for the business had this issue because it adjoined another structure. He said, according to the state statute, it is legal to have a cigar shop and lounge at the Franklin Street location. The grant application states that the project involves painting the exterior of the building, removing and replacing concrete entrances, curbs, sidewalks, etc., to conform with city code, sealing and striping the parking lot, renovating interior plumbing and HVAC, framing, insulation, ceiling and electrical work, and architectural drawings. The estimated number of jobs created is listed at 10 or more. If approved, construction is expected to last from about March to July. Continuing with the Our Communities section of the News Gazette, Illinois Legislature, Push for Prescription Drug Affordability Board Revived, by Ismail M. Belcoura, Springfield. With prescription drug costs soaring, Illinois lawmakers announced legislation this week reviving efforts to create a prescription drug affordability board with the goal of capping the growing cost of medication. The measure, House Bill 1443, is backed by State Senator Robert Peters, Democrat of Chicago, and State Representative Nabila Syed, Democrat Palatine. This bill creates a board. It meaningfully engages a stakeholder council that is appointed in a bipartisan manner and puts our constituents, over profits, Syed said. Because at the end of the day, this is a bipartisan issue that affects all Illinoisans. No Republicans had joined on as co-sponsors of the legislation as of Thursday. The proposed board would be an independent body that would review and set upper payment limits in each step of the supply chain, said Anusha Thottakura, the executive director of Citizen Action Illinois, a progressive lobbying organization. The board would decide which prescriptions would be subject to price caps. Those could include drugs for cancer, autoimmune diseases, and diabetes, according to Citizen Action Illinois. Representative Will Guzzardi, Democrat, Chicago, first proposed the idea for a drug affordability board in 2019. The proposal ended up stalling in committee after receiving pushback from pharmaceutical and insurance companies. Last year, SIAD pushed for the board's creation, but the bill did not receive enough legislative support and was never voted on. Governor J.B. Pritzker did not say if he would specifically support the proposed board when asked at a news conference in Springfield on Thursday. "We're all dedicated to that, whether it comes in the form of a board that might pass on the pricing of drugs or in the form of PBM reform, pharmaceutical benefits managers, and the profits that they're taking, which ultimately are taking out of the pockets of all of us," Pritzker said. Citizen Action Illinois has held several town halls in cities across the state last year to gather support for the plan, including in Peoria, Chicago, and Rock Island. "The work has been done here, meeting with stakeholders, having those conversations," Peters said. "We need to put people over greed. We need to put health care over cost." A Reuters analysis found that new U.S. drug prices increased by 35% from 2022 to 2023. That same year, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services reported 4,200 drugs had price increases over a one-year span, with 46% of those increases greater than the rate of inflation. Increasing costs often leads to patients rationing drugs and not taking their medication in prescribed amounts, according to Dr. Anthony Douglas, a general surgery resident at the University of Chicago. "The lack of prescription drug affordability leads Illinois residents to being hospitalized for conditions that could be effectively treated and controlled at home if they could just afford their medication," Douglas said. Pharmaceutical company lobbyists have argued that while there are individual examples of drug prices spiraling out of control, prices overall, and the total amount spent on drugs nationwide, have risen only modestly in recent years. Insurance company representatives have said the small group and individual plans that would be covered by the bill make up only a small segment of the private insurance market. Since Maryland approved the creation of one in 2019, 10 other states have created prescription drug affordability boards. State lawmakers and consumer advocates are also looking at other methods to combat rising medication costs. In 2023, Illinois' Kwame Raoul was one of 23 attorneys general to push for reform of the 340B drug pricing plan. The program requires drug manufacturers participating in Medicare and Medicaid to discount certain drugs at eligible hospitals and healthcare centers. The bill's sponsors are hopeful that enough legislators have shifted their views for the bill to succeed. "I believe, especially now more than ever, we have the ability to get more than enough members on board to get legislation like this across," Syed said. "Because I can guarantee you, coming off of the election season, many of my colleagues have heard at the doors that people can't afford their groceries, they can't afford their mortgage, and they can't afford their prescription drugs." Ismael M. Belcura is a graduate student in journalism with the Northwestern University's Medill School of Journalism, Media, Integrated Marketing Communications, and is a fellow in its Medill, Illinois News Bureau, working in partnership with Capital News Illinois. Still in the communities, our communities section, bills introduced to punish students who sexually assault other students at school by Ben Zielinski and Jade Aubrey, Springfield. Republican lawmakers have put forward a proposal to expel students who sexually assault another student at school. Current state law has no provisions requiring students to expel a student who commits sexual violence or assault against another student at school. However, the law says that if a student brings firearms, knives, brass knuckles, or any other weapon that can be used to cause bodily harm into a school, they must be expelled for at least a year. State Senator Steve McClure, Republican, Springfield, said the goal of Senate Bill 98 is to force schools to confront and deal with issues of sexual assault at a school or any activity or event related to a school. He said this issue was brought to his attention when he caught wind of an incident that involved a 10-year-old girl in Taylorville. The girl's mother, Ashley Pedden, spoke alongside McClure at a Capitol News conference this week in support of the bill. Pedden, who is a teacher in Springfield, said the way that the Taylorville School District handled the assault against her daughter caused her to rethink her decision to be a teacher. "The lack for safety of all students has been a concern of mine from the very beginning, so much that at one point I was asked, 'Are you worried about your daughter or the other students?' she said, to which I quickly replied, 'I'm worried about every single one of them, aren't you?'" Pedden said that between late January and early February 2024, her 10-year-old daughter was sexually assaulted by an older student who was 14 years old on their school bus and at their bus stop. The assaults increased in severity every day until the final assault, where her daughter was chased from her bus stop and raped. After reporting the incident, Pedden said she obtained an emergency order of protection for her daughter and brought it to the principal of Taylorville Junior High, who made a safety plan for her daughter. Pedden said the plan prohibited the accused student from coming into contact with her daughter at school, which the order of protection already called for. "This safety plan was shared with the bus company, my daughter's fifth grade teacher, and office staff," Pedden said. "No one else knew of the assaults. No one else knew of the safety plan. As an educator myself, I have been part of a situation where all staff needed to know about something about a student," she said. "It was as simple as an email saying, 'Student A should not be in the presence of student B. We need to keep them apart.' I asked for it to be just as generic than that, and I was not granted that." Pedden said after several meetings with the school board and multiple court orders, the student was removed from her daughter's school and sent to an alternative school for the rest of the spring semester. However, in August, she received a phone call about the student's re-entry into her daughter's school and again asked the school to remove the student. "We have laws where a student gets expelled for bringing a weapon on school grounds, but what about cases like this, when the student's body is the weapon?" Pedden said. "This boy continuously brought his weapon to school, on the bus, and to the bus stop. This is not acceptable. This is not ensuring safety for all students." McClure said the bill is aimed at stopping schools from sweeping issues of sexual assault under the rug. "What's happening right now is silence in these schools," McClure said, "because they're not telling the parents in some cases, and other students aren't even aware of what's happening. That's a danger to them as well." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for January 31st, 2025. Please stay tuned.